KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Rachel Solomon. This is Speakers Forum. In the book Rethinking Money, economist Bernard Liotard and journalist Jackie Dunn trace the beginnings of our monetary system, including its serious problems and hope for the future. The two tell stories of communities who have used new money, in addition to national currency, to make their local economies more sustainable. Today, more than 4,000 of these cooperative currencies are in circulation. Liotard and Dunn spoke at Seattle's Town Hall on March 20th, 2013. Dunn speaks first.
Good evening. That's more like it. So, does this feel familiar? Instead of crack, snackle, and pop in the morning, we're sort of chomping on bad news and dealing with the monetary crunch, the credit crunch. And we actually get indigestion in the morning, don't we, when we actually think of all these furloughed jobs. We're thinking about the next sequester, the next fiscal cliff. And we think of our own lives. Some of us may have been laid off work. We are facing an uncertain future. How do we deal with our aging parents? How do we educate our children? How do we bring community back into our cities? How do we deal with urban blight? And when you think about it, it all comes down to a question of money, doesn't it? And rather than being the usual doom and gloom type of conversation we're going to have with you here this evening, we actually have a message of enormous hope. We're going to be telling you stories of real people doing extraordinary things simply by rethinking money. So, one thing we've got to think about is money, we don't really think about it a great deal. It's like a given. We're like fish that swim in water. We swim in the money system, and we don't really get a perspective from which to really analyze what money truly is. So, what is money? And if you open up any economics textbook, then this is the only word of economics I'm going to use all evening, is they won't tell you what money is, they'll tell you what it does, its functions. And it will say that money is a unit of account, it is a medium of exchange, and it is a store of value. What we're saying, that's what money does. What we're saying here, what money is actually an agreement. It's an agreement within a community to use a standardized unit of account. We call these currencies that are growing up in tandem with the conventional system of dollars, euros, pesos, as complementary currencies. And way back in 84, we were counting only two major complementary currencies anywhere in the world. In about 2005, before the major crisis, we stopped counting, and we're somewhere about 4,000 mature systems around the globe. So, what do these complementary currency things do? So, this is a picture of a botanical garden. There's nothing extraordinary about a botanical garden. What is extraordinary about this botanical garden is that it once sat on a dump site in the town of Curitiba, Brazil. And about 25 years ago, the mayor of Curitiba, a guy called Jaime Lerner, had a terrible problem. He had a problem of favelas, which were shanty towns that had grown up all around the town. And he hadn't got the money to level the shanty towns, so he said, what am I going to do? I've got to keep these shanty towns, but I have a terrible garbage problem, and I don't really have the money to clean it up. Furthermore, the garbage trucks are having terrible difficulty getting up the very, very narrow streets in order to collect the garbage, and as a result, there's all kinds of diseases, there's rats, all kinds of problems. So he said, but I still don't have much money in order to deal with this problem. Sounds familiar? So he thought, and he said, I have a good bus system. And this is now a later version of the bus system, I want to point out. And I've all this spare capacity on the buses, empty seats, in other words. And so what happens today is that people get into that tubular-looking thing there and prepay their bus ride with using a token. And about 8 doors open up, and about 100 people can get on the bus in a matter of moments, rather than what we do here is everybody gets on, pays their token, blah, blah, blah. It takes ages. This is really hyper-efficient, really one of the best systems in the world. Anyway, he said, so Jaime said, I've got all the spare capacity on the buses that are running around the town. So he sent out a notice to the children in the favelas and said, for every bag of garbage that is sorted between glass, paper, and cans, each child would get a token to ride the bus system. And lo and behold, in a matter of weeks, all the favelas were picked clean of the garbage. And if anybody speaks Portuguese, please forgive me, but you can see on this particular box, leche que no leche. Am I saying that correctly, Bernard? Thank you.
I've been practicing. A little bit of a southern accent in the Brazilian style.
Which means garbage that is not garbage. And so for what happened then, not only were people using the tokens to use the bus service, but local vendors would actually buy local produce using these tokens. And here is a box of staples that has been given to somebody living in Curitiba. What's really interesting in this, and this is probably one of my favorite photographs from Curitiba, is days that the fishermen go out into the bay and the fish aren't biting, they actually trawl for garbage. And they bring in the garbage to the mainland and where it is sorted. What is interesting about the Curitiba story is that this currency, the garbage currency, along with several other currencies that were very inventively organized by the then mayor, Jaime Lerner, the average person who lived in Curitiba have a standard of living that is one-third higher than anybody else living in Brazil. Purely by rethinking money, they have a higher standard of living to where, today, that was built with local money. This is where the former garbage dump was in the town of Curitiba. Can you imagine something like this working for Seattle?
Jackie Dunn and Bernard Liotard, authors of Rethinking Money, How New Currencies Turn Scarcity into Prosperity. They spoke at Seattle's Town Hall on March 20th, 2013. You can learn more and hear the whole hour of the talk by going to kuow.org/programs/speakers-forum. Cameron Drews recorded this talk. I'm Rachel Solomon, KUOW 94.9, Seattle.
More from Bernard Liotard and Jackie Dunn in a moment. 8:15, 94.9 KUOW. A blast at a fertilizer plant near Waco, Texas, levels buildings and rattles homes more than 40 miles away. Also, there will be a unique musical score played in northern England. Its centerpiece is a lighthouse and its foghorn. Thieves have raided a museum warehouse in Ireland, tied up the guard, and made off with valuable ivory. And developers create a phone app to prevent Icelanders from accidentally dating a relative. All tonight at 11 o'clock. Weather outlook for the Seattle area for tonight. Lows mid to upper 40s and rain. Friday, highs lower to mid-50s and showers. Friday night, lows lower to mid-40s, mostly cloudy, chance of showers. Saturday, highs mid to upper 50s, mostly cloudy, chance of showers. The fertilizer plant explosion in Texas, the Boston bombings, and suspicious letters addressed to President Obama and several others. That'll be all under discussion tonight at midnight on the Diane Rehm Show.
Join KUOW for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, live on the big screen featuring Peter Sagal, Carl Castle, and special guests. Thursday, May 2nd at 8 p.m. at various Puget Sound movie theaters, with an encore on Tuesday, May 7th. Learn more on the events page at KUOW.org.
KUOW thanks the generous individuals and entities who provided matching challenges during our spring membership drive. They include Fred Hutchinson Cancer Research Center staff, Paul and Penny Fredland, Jack and Merritt on Whidbey Island, KUOW's Board of Directors and Board of Directors alumni, and 33 anonymous Broadcasters Circle members.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Rachel Solomon. This is Speakers Forum. How did money begin? And what exactly is money? In the new book, Rethinking Money, Jackie Dunn and Bernard Liotard trace its origins, talk about its problems in today's societies, and discuss its hope for the future. Liotard and Dunn spoke at Seattle's Town Hall on March 20th, 2013. Dunn speaks next.
Another example of something that we're all concerned about is how do we take care of people as they age? How we will take care of ourselves as we reach our dotage? So Japan actually hit this problem about 20 years ago, as it has the fastest growing graying population in the world. And they set up a program called Furiai Kipu, which means caring friendship tickets, and how this is how it works. I go down the road to a little old lady that is part of the Furiai Kipu network, and I, for example, could bring her out shopping. I could perhaps drive her to a dentist appointment, or I could help her write a letter to her insurance company, whatever she needs doing. For every hour that I spend taking care of my neighbor, I get an electronic credit in my Furiai Kipu account, which I can use when I come down with flu, or when I get older, when I need help. Or alternatively, I can actually transfer to another part of the country so somebody can actually come in and take care of my aunt or my mum, for example. There are about 500 of these systems operational all through Japan, and with some very, very interesting results. Number one is the elderly love it. They love the fact that somebody from the neighborhood is coming in and keeping an eye on them. Friendships grow up out of these relationships, and that's one of the problems that we face in our society today, is we all seem to be so incredibly siloed depending on our age. So there's this wonderful meshing, remeshing of the neighborhood that's happening. And what is also very important for the bottom line is it's not costing the government anything. So it is, there are about two clearinghouses that actually keep track of all this and make sure that the standards are maintained. It is somewhat akin to time banking. I believe we have some folks here today from the Seattle Time Bank, the Four Corners. Can we give you a shout out to them? Yeah. Hi.
I wouldn't call it a time bank, but whatever.
Oh, okay.
It's in that style.
It's in that style.
It's more like a
Less. Oh, it's a Less system.
Fine.
So it's a mutual credit system.
So
okay.
More similar.
So a mutual credit system. Okay. Time banking is in America the most frequently used form of complementary currency. It is a currency backed for time. It was founded by Edgar Kahn. And there are about 400 systems right throughout the country, and they're growing by about one to two systems every single week. There's such a demand for it. The application related to time banking and taking care of the elderly is in New York. Mayor Bloomberg has actually endorsed time banking, and I think the largest network of time banks are in New York with about 3,000 users. So these are not minor or marginalized by any manner of means. So besides the social aspects and blending communities, getting communities to assess what their unused resources and their unmet needs are, there are applications in business, which Bernard will describe for us.
I'm only going to describe one. It's called the Wien. It's the oldest one. It's one of the two that existed in 1984 already. Actually, it dates back to 1934. It's a business-to-business system. And it was started by 17 business people in the middle of the Depression. What happened was, like happens now, small businesses would be squeezed by the banks in terms of getting access to credit. And they suddenly realized, but in fact, I'm trying to get a loan from the bank in order to pay you, right? I'm buying from you. So why don't we do that ourselves? So I sell you something, I have a credit, you have a debit. If you were doing something back for me, that would be simple barter. However, if in my credit I can buy something from you, and you can sell something to the lady in the back, we just created a currency between the four of us. One Wien equals one Swiss franc. It's you still pay your taxes on it, of course, but the taxes need to be paid in Swiss francs. But that currency that nobody ever talks about, I'm sure, I've never found an audience in America that actually knows about it, it exists for almost 80 years now. And it is the secret for the stability of the Swiss economy. Why? When there is a boom period, and you come to buy me stuff in Wien, I will tell you, well, wait a minute, come back next month. However, when we are in the recession and my staff is half idle, I'm going to immediately accept it. So what happens is that it stabilizes the economy by working counter-cyclically. When the economy is big, the volume of Wien is small. When the economy is small, the volume increases. And that's what stabilizes employment and have been statistically proven to be the case. So,
what's also very interesting about this is about 20% of all business in Switzerland is actually in this other complementary currency called the Wir, which is a B2B currency. And there's about 65,000 businesses that actually accept Wir in payment.
So here is actually, it's completely electronic, by the way. There are no Wir papers. Okay, when you open an account, when you become a member, you have a dual account. One in Swiss francs and one in Wien. And you can get loans, for example, to buy a house, half and half. So there's a whole economy around that system. And it exists for 79 years. So we're not talking something improvised.
This is a project that has been designed by Bernard in the country of Lithuania, who has a female president. And she really wants her country to become a learning country. And she wants all Lithuanians under the age of 40 to become trilingual. Most Lithuanians speak Lithuanian or Russian or Lithuanian Polish, but she wants them to learn Spanish, English, of course, and maybe Chinese. She wants them to have proficiency in the internet and to encourage intergenerational learning. So one of the advantages, or some of the advantages that this country has, for example, it has the highest penetration of fiber optics in Europe, and everybody has a cell phone with some SIM cards. So by thinking outside the box, well, this is what they have come up with. So for those who would like to participate in this, like everybody has their bucket list, something that they've always dreamed about doing, like going to live with the Maasai warriors in the Serengeti in Kenya, for example.
I'm not sure that's a typical example for everybody. But
no, but but I want to go live with the Maasai for a while. But whatever it might be, whatever your dream is that you have on your bucket list, I'm giving that as an exotic example. May go to study Zen Buddhism in Japan, whatever it might be. So you have your dream project, and you make an agreement with the Lithuanian Learning Foundation. You say, okay, I can speak English, and I'm willing to give 3,000 hours of teaching of English in return for my dream, the realization of my dream. So you make a contract, and they issue DORAs. And your DORA account is the telephone number of your cell phone. Additionally, there are non-profits, and this is a way in which the non-profit community can, in this complementary or cooperative community, have the same role that corporations have in our highly competitive system we have in dollar land. So they may have a learning component to whatever they're doing, like might be permaculture, for example, and people may want to teach permaculture or learn permaculture, and they can be issued DORAs. And of course, there's a non-profit that earns DORAs by making sure that all this is working out correctly and all the accounts are exact and correct. So anyway, so this person, you know, teaches for 3,000 hours. It could be, you know, 300 people at 10 hours. You know, it's not one hour after one hour after one hour. They can be done collectively. And they then fulfill their contract, and then the Lithuanian Learning Foundation puts together the package, and it could be, say, if I'm going abroad, it could be frequent flying miles to get me there, and everything that actually makes this dream of mine come alive. There are two fascinating aspects to this proposal that I really, really enjoy. One is to fulfill this promise of lifelong learning. It's not just how to use the internet, but also how I can learn other things as I get older. And one thing they're doing is they're getting children over the age of 12 to teach older folks how to use the internet. And the child earns DORAs and the person learning also earns DORAs as well. So it's a mutual thing. And again, here we are knitting the generations again, rebuilding, reweaving the fabric of community. And what is truly lovely is for those children under the age of 12, they go to an older person within their community and ask them this really penetrating question: what have you learned in your life that could benefit mine? And whatever the old person tells that young person, they can either record it on a tape recorder, they might write an essay, they might do something in multimedia. Obviously, the more sophisticated the presentation, the more DORAs the kid would earn. But both the elderly person and the young person earn DORAs. And there are other examples.
Well, one of them happens right here. I already mentioned it, the time dollar system. What's interesting about the time dollar system is that the IRS has now ruled three times that it is tax exempt. So because it solves social problems that otherwise would cost a lot of taxpayer dollars, they actually make it exempt to operate in the time dollar system.
So it's not so much the amount of money that you actually throw at an issue, it's the type of money. And what we're saying here today is because there's now a confluence of these complementary currencies aided by access to the computer, access to social media, and to the internet, all this information is flourishing. And you can go online, and it's amazing what you can download in terms of YouTube videos. You can actually download software, free software, manuals, everything you need to do in order to set up a complementary currency. And this is not something that you do in a vacuum. You can't go down into your own basement and say, gee whiz, I'm going to, you know, create a currency. You basically, what we suggest, it's a pull technology, not a push technology. So you get into conversation within your community. It could be a B2B community, it could be a neighborhood community, whatever it is. And you sit down and say, what are the issues that we are facing? What are our unused resources? And what are our unmet needs? And then design the currency accordingly.
There are many, many more examples we could give you. And in fact, the book has 50 or 60 different types of examples. So you can have a wide range. We have given you a very short inkling of what's possible. Now, the context in which this becomes, I believe, very relevant is today's system. I'm going to illustrate it with a picture because it can replace a lot of words. You can look at it top down or bottom up, but the picture is fairly homogeneous. The second point is this. This is not an extract from a leftist French journal. This is an extract from The Economist. The third reason is that the current system is running out of ideas. We have been pumping trillions of dollars into the world economy. Japan has been stuck for 20 years in the same spiral we're in now and hasn't gotten out of it. So the usual solutions have been worse in history, because they're actually repeating what's happening now in the 30s. By the way, let me just give you a little interesting tidbit. The first time that the word Great Depression was used in the United States to describe the 1930s was 1955. When the people were in the middle of it, they didn't know that they were in the Great Depression. Okay? And they were reading the same headlines in the newspapers as we read today. Oh, it went up a little bit. It's everything. Oh, well, now the euro, the Cyprus has a problem, so the thing is going down a little bit. So we have kind of like forever going on. So I think we need to find another solution. The final way of looking at this is the bigger picture. If you put in one box all patriarchal societies, societies that honor primarily or exclusively masculine values, that includes Sumer, Babylon, the Greeks, the Romans, and since the Renaissance, the Western society. They have something very interesting in common. They use the same money as we do. Not the same form, but they always use a monopoly of a single currency, top-down, imposed top-down, with interest. Interest was invented in Sumer. Writing was invented in order to make financial contracts, not for writing love letters. Sorry for the romantics. Okay, now, the system, the modern system, modern version of this, is being, we're not saying it's bad, we're just saying it's not sufficient. And why are we saying that it's not bad? Well, first of all, it gave us the Industrial Age. The Industrial Age would never have occurred without it. But it also produced booms and bust cycles. We are in one, again. It also produced concentration of wealth, systematically and predictably. Interest is an extraction from the masses to the top, who have a lot more money, by definition. And it destroys community, because it's not compatible. Now, if you want to know whether you're in a patriarchal society, it is a very easy way. If the vision of the divine is that it's a man with a beard who has done it all without a girlfriend, you are in a patriarchal society. Now, matrifocal societies are societies like this one, Egypt, where the nice role is played by a lady, Isis. Isis saved Osiris several times when he got in trouble, and out of love. Okay? In the central Middle Ages, from the 10th to the 13th century, which is the period of the cathedrals were built for a lady, okay? Not for Jesus Christ and not for the Pope. So this was an exception in our history where feminine values were being honored. What those societies have in common is that they had a dual currency system. They had the same currency as the patriarchal society to trade with people you don't know, far away. And they had a second system with bottom-up currencies, exactly the opposite, produced the opposite way, no interest. Actually, the most sophisticated ones had a penalty for keeping the money. So it would be a pure medium of exchange, not a store of value. And it would circulate all the time. And everybody had money as a consequence, because nobody would accumulate it. So these societies had economic stability for centuries. In Egypt, it lasted over 2,000 years. And it was only forcefully stopped by when the Romans invaded and changed the money system. The little people, the bottom 20% of society, had the highest standard of living in these societies. We have actually evidence that even today, the people, for example, women in the city of London were 1 centimeter taller in the 12th century than today. And height, as we well know, has to do. And the men have only caught up in the last 25 years with the standards of the 12th century. So this is hard evidence, bones, that we actually had a different standard of living. I think the challenges of the 21st century are extraordinary. They're unprecedented. I think it's time to mobilize both the masculine and the feminine side, both the currencies that are competitive, like the dollar, and currency that are cooperative, like the ones we've been talking about, in balance. And that makes it possible to launch an other way of living in a society. And it's time that we do that. It's actually happening already. We're in the middle of this. It's not being reported in its significance. Typically when they talk about this, it's kind of like a calf with two heads. You know, a curiosity, a local curiosity. But it is significant. Thank you very much for your attention.
And this is our book in which we've chronicled the stories of, gosh, at least 40 or 50 different types of money. Mm-hmm. And the ordinary people that, coming together with their community, are doing extraordinary work. So we'd be delighted to take your questions.
Jackie Dunn and Bernard Liotard, authors of Rethinking Money, How New Currencies Turn Scarcity into Prosperity. They spoke at Seattle's Town Hall on March 20th, 2013. You can learn more and hear the whole hour of the talk by going to kuow.org/programs/speakers-forum. Cameron Drews recorded this talk. I'm Rachel Solomon, KUOW 94.9 Seattle.
More from Bernard Liotard and Jackie Dunn in a moment. 836, 94.9 KUOW. Seattle theater audiences know R. Hamilton Wright, all better known as Bob Wright, from his long career on stage. Over the past decade, Wright has added both stage director and playwright to his resume. Wright's wife, Katie Forgette, was also a fixture on Seattle stages. She has forged a new career for herself as a produced playwright. Forgette's newest play, Assisted Living, opens at Act Theater this weekend, directed by Bob Wright. Hear Forgette and Wright talk about the new play, about collaborating on a project, and about their latest theatrical incarnation tomorrow morning in the 9 o'clock hour. Weather outlook for the Seattle area for tonight, lows mid to upper 40s and rain. Friday, highs lower to mid 50s and showers. Friday night, lows lower to mid 40s, mostly cloudy, chance of showers. Saturday, highs mid to upper 50s, mostly cloudy, chance of showers. Perspectives on firearms from two men who've used them in the commission of crimes. Also, a look at how the music and radio industries fed off one another during the Golden Age. And Mel Sheldon talks about his odyssey to chairmanship of the Tulalip tribe, including fishing for 25 years, working as a houseboy at two University of Washington sororities, and serving as a pilot in Vietnam. All three of these items next hour, beginning right after the 9 o'clock news.
Join KUOW in the National Film Festival for Talented Youth for NIFTY 2013, April 25th through the 28th, featuring a wide variety of films from around the world, all made by filmmakers ages 22 and under at venues throughout Seattle. Learn more on the events page at kuow.org.
Hi, I'm Phyllis Fletcher, KUOW News. KUOW welcomes all the new and renewing members who participated in our recent membership drive. Thank you for making this drive so successful. When you get your pledge reminder in the mail, be sure to return it as soon as you can. And thanks again for all your support.
From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Rachel Solomon. This is Speakers Forum. Jackie Dunn and Bernard Liotard are the authors of the new book, Rethinking Money: How New Currencies Turn Scarcity into Prosperity. They spoke at Seattle's Town Hall on March 20th, 2013. Next, they take questions from the audience.
I think I get it. It was women I worked with when we set up a babysitting co-op.
Yes.
And a parent co-op preschool. Mm-hmm. And not a lot of money going around in that.
Well,
it met needs.
You have already improvised created a complementary currency. I don't know whether you lifted your hand when I asked whether it had used the system, okay? But not only did you use one, you created one.
And we probably want to draw the distinction between barter and using a currency.
Sure. Barter is when you make an exchange where there is no standard medium of exchange. I use my shoes this time and my tie another time and the microphone the third time. So we have no standard exchange. The problem with that is that it's highly inefficient. But what is your name?
Marsha.
has been using a standard. It was an hour of babysitting, right?
Yes.
So, in other words, there was a standard unit of account in there. And you would create it in lots of different scales. By the way, this is not necessarily local. Some of the proposals are a global proposal, for example, for a currency that would be a currency that is nobody's national currency. Okay? And the reason for that is actually geopolitically more stable. Okay? It's going to, wars are created around currency influence, monetary influence zones. And the second thing is that it actually is a currency that's designed to make its users think long-term. And this is for corporations, a business-to-business system on a global level that programs corporations to think long-term. Currently, they're programmed to think short-term. So that's one end of the spectrum. And the other end is your babysitting stuff, right? I'm sure it wasn't in one neighborhood. And you have stuff in all kinds of scales in between.
A couple questions. The where and the door sections are really good, and I'm sorry if the detail I'm about to ask for is just in your book. But I guess my questions are, in both cases, there are questions of valuation. I mean, in the door example you talked about, as children do different kinds of work, that it's valued in certain numbers of DORA, and I'm wondering how that bureaucracy or that value assignment takes place. And in the where example, I guess I have a couple questions too. When you're mixing and matching between a traditional currency and a non-traditional currency, and the things that are being sold aren't necessarily orthogonal with one another. So there's these questions of valuation. How those are established, especially when you're working in a mixed model. And then as a corollary to that, and sort of what you alluded to with US and the IRS so forth, is how are these alternate systems, how do they fit into a total policy of taxation,
okay,
where valuation is also an issue?
Let me start with the second question first. Because the WIR is actually cooperative. It's owned by the 70,000 businesses, right? They set the rules. Now, the rule is that one WIR equals one Swiss franc, and you're not allowed to give another price, whether it's in Swiss francs than in WIR. So the valuation is solved, one-to-one. Okay. And from a tax viewpoint, you need to pay your taxes,
sure,
and your taxes are payable in Swiss francs.
Well, that makes sense.
Right. So that's that answer for that particular system. The DORA, the time would actually, the unit would be an hour of teaching or learning. Okay, so again, if you find people are interested in learning from you, that means you're good enough, right? If you don't find anybody, you're not good enough. This is an open system, right? And there is an audit, as Jackie mentioned. There is a non-profit organization that's been set up to play the role of an audit that the audit companies do in the conventional economy. So in other words, that there is appropriate use for it. And it's completely traceable. Eh? This is purely electronically available. So you can actually have a full track. You cannot really, cannot grade it out of nothing. Because you could track it down. From a tax viewpoint, it's not the currency that determines whether you're taxable or not. Okay? With the exception of the time banking, for example, time banking is officially tax exempt. But all the other cases, it doesn't matter. I can change you a cake for a massage, but if you're in the massage business, you're supposed to declare that as an income. Okay?
Thank you.
Hi. It seems like a concurrent currency to work needs three parts: a financial strategy that works, technology that works, and community engagement.
Correct.
And you see a lot of concurrent currencies that fail because they miss in one,
sure,
of the areas.
Yes.
Like, sure.
Bitcoin does really well because it's got a good technology, but
we wouldn't
weird.
Call Bitcoin a currency.
The reason being
that it's actually a speculative tool, not a medium of exchange.
Right, right.
So, you know, it's another purpose.
Mm-hmm. But I guess my question is, with all these currencies trying to kind of stick and many of them missing one of those three areas, what do you see as a place where people can learn how to design currencies and spin them up? You see a lot of people building new mobile apps or online tools that are kind of indirectly building concurrent currencies but don't realize it.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get more people learning to think of themselves as effective currency designers?
That's a great question. And we must think of these currencies like the early days of flight, like the Wright brothers. It's a miracle that any of these take off. But we will start perfecting through trial and error. And one of the things that Bernard is very, very interested in is training the trainers, is actually getting leaders within communities to come together and looking at their unused resources and unmet needs and looking at, for example, not only applicable technology, but also the very interesting thing that we've been discussing actually in the last few days, Bernard and myself, is about the use of the commons. Would you like to say some more about that, Bernard?
For those who are familiar with the work of Ostrom, Elinor Ostrom, who has got the Nobel Prize, in fact, a currency is a commons. But it hasn't been managed. The conventional currency has not been managed as a commons. It has been managed as a control system, top down. So the other one should be managed in a transparent way as a commons. And one of the criteria is hyperdemocracy. Anybody affected should be able to get input into the process of changing the rules. You know, the point is not necessarily to have the perfect system, because the needs of the community may change over time. And you can adapt it. One other thing is transparency, you know, which is all the things that the conventional system doesn't do. So I think that's the direction that we should go. And the key point, as Jackie pointed out already, find out what your purpose is. Currency has a purpose, okay? Not just, it's not started for its own. And identify the unmet needs that you want to cover and what are unused resources that are mobilizable and create the link between them.
It seems like we need some kind of currency accelerator or incubator.
Yes.
Kind of like Y Combinator.
Well, actually, we had a session, as Jackie mentioned, in September last year. I actually did the first course, and there were 21 countries present, that for designing currencies. And out of that workshop came 7 new designs, for one for Madagascar, for Singapore, for Mexico, for everywhere, including the United States. The Santa Barbara system that's currently being designed and implemented comes from there.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Let's try comparing money to the complementary currencies just a minute and see how this...
conventional
money. Get some comments from you on this. With conventional money, I can, with $1 United States, I can buy a Bing Wan in Shanghai, a Choro in Wallingford, or a Coca-Cola in Zimbabwe. There was an attempt here about 15 years ago in a neighborhood in Seattle called Fremont to develop something called Fremont Dollars, which worked on a sort of a time hours kind of thing. And it failed for the basic difference there, that it had a fairly small community within which currency was generated and received, as opposed to basically being able to buy anything around the world. So one of the issues seems to be that these complementary currencies are internal systems. They are traded within the people who are members of that network.
Correct.
And they do not have a conversion value into other systems so that they can be used in Shanghai or Zimbabwe.
Well, it depends what the purpose of your currency is.
And so that seems to be a key difference and something that we really need to kind of think about. The other issue is that with money, with conventional money, you set for yourself the value of what something's going to be. You know, I'll get this permit for you at $150 an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody else will cut your hair for about $30 an hour. So with an hour type thing, you're kind of set where everybody, no matter how scarce the skill is they bring to the task, gets paid 1 hour.
That's true.
Could you kind of talk about these kind of differences between the complementary currencies and the
money?
That depends on the system. You are correct. In the time banking system that we have referred to, everybody's time is equal. Now, that basically means it works very well in ghettos, among students, elderly people, retired people, but you have no dentists. Okay? Well, that's one of the consequences. However, there's another model called the Ithaca Hour, which is operational now for about 15, 20 years in Ithaca and has about 30 other applications in this country. Well, a dentist can charge you for a root canal that takes him 20 minutes, 10 hours. Right? So, in other words, it depends on the rules of the system. And some systems have specific purposes that are different from others. What you're assuming is, for example, that the convertibility on a global level is necessary. Well, it's not necessary for taking care of your elderly neighbors, is it? Because you're not going to be doing this with the people in Zimbabwe or in China, right? So different systems have different purposes.
Also, additionally, there are certain currencies that are designed to incentivize people to shop locally, for example. One of the problems that most cities are finding is their dollars are going out of their neighborhood. So Berkshires in the Berkshires, try to say that one quickly, is an example of a local currency that's designed specifically to incentivize people to support local businesses and local services and buy local goods. So we're talking about
so
a monetary...
So you don't want convertibility.
They don't want it to be convertible because they want to keep the money in town.
But don't you have a serious issue with those kind of systems of inflation and deflation problems?
No.
I mean, you sort of have that with frequent flyer miles. Frequent flyer miles are being deflated now. If you've ever tried to use them recently, you find that what used to take 25,000 miles now takes 40,000 to get the exact same damn trip.
Bernard is dying to answer that one.
Central bank that sort of controls
the
supply.
May I suggest that the regulated ones have also a problem? If you don't, you noticed lately. Okay. All right. So now, the depends on the system whether it can contribute or not to inflation. Let me give you a generic example. The Weir system that we talked about, or the system that you have here, the fourth corner, or the time dollar systems, the currency, you have inflation when you have more currency issued than the goods or services that it can redeem for. In these examples, which we technically call mutual credit, because the currency is created at the moment of the transaction of the exchange, the good or service is there at the moment of creation of the currency. So it cannot generate inflation. You see the point? Because the good is there. If there is no good available and agreed on, the currency doesn't exist. So, in other words, depending on the system, you will or will not have a problem. Fiat currencies, technically called currencies created out of nothing, and that includes airline miles, and that includes dollars or any other national money, has that problem. Because the money is created in abstract, actually in the case of dollars and all the national currencies, it's created at the moment when a bank makes a loan. That's how the money is created. That is not related to the good or service that you're buying with it. So that is where the inflation problem can arise.
I'll keep this quick. I don't believe in foolish questions, so I'm going to ask the question.
There's never such a thing as
never
foolish.
Such a thing.
No, never
and
such a thing.
Besides, if I ask it, I'll bet you dollars of donuts somebody else is thinking it. I'm back on that first example with the bus system and the garbage collection in the barrio in Brazil.
Yes.
And this is just a new concept for me, so I'm trying to wrap my head around it.
Absolutely.
And what I'm trying to understand is, fine, I see this wonderful exchange between the people who suddenly the barrios are clean and they get tokens and they can ride on the bus. If the bus is taking all these credited drivers, passengers, who's paying the gas, and okay. Who's paying the bus driver?
Another one Bernard is dying to answer.
Very simply. Actually, the bus system in Curitiba is private. There are 5 or 10 different bus companies with different access. And they're paid by the mile driven, not by the number of passengers on it.
Oh.
So that gives them an incentive to run very quickly. And the rule is, the principle is, one of the tests of quality, nobody should wait more than 5 minutes in any one of the things before the bus comes along. So that gives part of the quality system. See, you need to be inventive about these things. The box. Get out of the box. Yes, sir.
Thanks. That was a wonderful talk. Made me think about a lot of different things. 5 months ago, I became a father.
Congratulations.
Yes, it's awesome. I love it. And But being and so me and friends are also having kids complaining about how there's no maternity leave and or paternity leave here in the United States.
Move to Sweden.
Yeah, I would love to. And also, you know, we had a lot of help from our friends and family, especially in the early days, bringing us meals, cleaning the house, you know, all this kind of stuff. And then now as things are getting a little bit easier, we're trying to give back and do similar things. And my wife's on a whole bunch of different groups. We live down in Columbia City, and there's a Columbia City stroller brigade of new moms that go and hang out together and give each other help. Sure. And stuff like that. So, and I was thinking about, like, you know, we just sort of all do it informally. We actually try and give back to people mm-hmm. who've given to, or, you know, give back in the world in the amount that we've given. But it suddenly occurred that, like, this would be a perfect system for a complimentary currency, yes. You know, for every hour that yes. somebody helped us out or babysat or cleaned our house, they'd get a token, and then later on they could redeem it, and we'd help them out, or something like that. So then I was like, how do these things start? And the other, actually, there's also a current big trade in breast milk, because there's some women that have low supply and have a big need, and there's some women that have oversupply, and they have to pump it out otherwise, right? So they have freezers fill, and they. You know, so like people will put out calls. So it's a really interesting kind of system. And like people will put out calls like, please, you know, can I get some breast milk? And I'm like, yeah, we got some. Sorry. So how do you get these things started? I mean, is there like a website that has like open source software you can start your own complimentary?
There are very good suggestions system. In that book that we mentioned.
Oh, I
yeah. Go buy the book. And we believe, in the gift economy, so buy two and give one to a friend.
No, seriously, there are manuals available, depending on which system that you're dealing with. Okay. And there are lots of different systems. There are manuals available on the road. They're mentioned, and they're good references for. So don't, I mean, now let me make one little point. When you have a community, and basically a community is fed by gift exchanges, you actually are having a currency system in there. The gift exchanges are part of that. That's the perfect system. When you are already, I believe in the long-term future, Dr. Spock in Star Trek says that in 2400 they don't have money, any kind of money. I believe that's possible. But we need to get new habits into our systems. And you're lucky to have a community of friends that actually was already in that habit. So you may not need a currency. But think about that.
Thank you. Bernard Liotard and Jackie Dunn, authors of Rethinking Money, How New Currencies Turn Scarcity into Prosperity. They spoke at Seattle's Town Hall on March 20th, 2013. You can learn more and hear the whole hour of the talk by going to kuow.org/programs/speakers-forum. Cameron Drews recorded this talk. I'm Rachel Solomon, KUOW 94.9 Seattle. Money, your way. Get a good job with more pay and you're okay. Money, it's a gas. Grab that cash with both hands and make a stash.
Support for KUOW comes from the Seattle Sounders FC, presenting the Sounders FC 4-match pack, which secures a seat among a crowd of 60,000 to 4 matches against rivals Vancouver, Portland, Real Salt Lake, and LA Galaxy. More information at soundersfc.com.
KUOW and the Seattle Public Library present Seattle Reads Gregory Martin's Stories for Boys, Book at Repertory Theater staged readings. April 22nd, 28th, and May 5th. Learn more on the events page at kuow.org.
9 o'clock, KUOW FM 94.9 Seattle, 1340.
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at kuow.org.